Well, you're up here today because, well, and this is the case with everybody who's doing this in this series. You're telling just a sliver of your life. It's not like today you're telling us your whole life story. You know, Tara and Sophia told us about just a small part, and same with the Franks. So what you're doing today is telling us about a move that you made that ultimately landed you here in Grand Rapids, a move from Laramie, Wyoming. Laramie, Wyoming. And I had never been to Wyoming until last week, and now I know why when you talk about it longingly, because it is beautiful. It is beautiful. But can you tell us a little bit about Laramie, and then we'll get to the move and all that stuff. But yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, so as we parsed out the questions, this is mine, because if anybody sat with me, I talk a lot about Wyoming in a very fond sense. I mean, it's definitely a kind of state that is cowboy and west through and through. It is very, very big, very, very wide open, and very, very sparse. It is the least populated state in the entire country, with the most guns per capita, which makes it just very much a cowboy state. And Laramie specifically is the university town, and Wyoming itself is, they only have one university, one four-year university, and it's in Laramie. And, you know, they barely are able to keep it full with the small state that it is. So Laramie is in southeast Wyoming. It's just a little bit west of Cheyenne over the mountains. And it's basically in this kind of big valley between two mountain ranges, the Snowy Range Mountains and the Medicine Bow Mountains, or the Laramie Range. And it's if people think about the West and they think about Colorado or Denver and things, I mean, Denver is the mile high city. Laramie is the mile and a half high city. It's another couple thousand feet higher. It's at 7,200 feet, excuse me. It's really high up. People who just come and visit, they start getting altitude sickness. It's a very, very high city. And I moved there after living in Colorado for a while. And Sarah Jane ended up joining me after we got married, or before we got married, actually, because I lived in Colorado for a couple of years and I couldn't afford any school in Colorado, and Wyoming was cheap. So I ended up going there and getting my degree. And that's why we ended up in Wyoming. I think that was everything.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. And in Wyoming, we got our degrees. I ended up living there. So I grew up in Rapid City, South Dakota. And I ended up moving to Laramie and actually living in Laramie longer than I ever lived in any other place, even including Rapid City. So I've had more years, 16 total, in Laramie, Wyoming. I thought I was going to die there. I had plans with friends that they were going to, when I died, help cut up my body and throw it to people.
We're not going to talk about
that. Or throw it out.
So that,
hey, cut. Yeah, sorry.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
I just want the recording, please.
I thought I was going to live and die there.
Apparently, yes. Fully and thoroughly.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, I didn't know that was part of this.
I didn't either. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
I love it. I love it, Micah. So you're in a place that you both have spent your whole life out in that South Dakota, Wyoming area. You love it, but you're not there anymore. You're here. why? What precipitated that move? Can you tell us a little bit about that part of the journey?
Yeah. So we moved here in 2016, but I think the decision to move here actually began long before that. So don't know, we have three incredible kids who are all adopted, and they all started their life journey in Ethiopia. And in the end of 2013, beginning of 2014, we were actually in Ethiopia preparing to bring home Elsa Meskram and Clarence Gamechu. And at the time, we took a visit to see Calvin Ratu's family, and we learned that he had two siblings that had been relinquished for adoption. We didn't know where they were. We were very much given limited information, but we started the quest of trying to track them down. So we returned here to, or we returned to Laramie, and I think we knew at the time that no matter how much we loved and identified with Laramie, that it didn't necessarily meet our needs as a transracial family, and we needed to make some significant changes to gain access to more resources, more families that look like ours, more human beings that look like our children. And so we began kind of cultivating this conversation that would lead to us exploring different options. And Colorado was on the agenda. And then fast forward to June of 2014, we met this family who had adopted Calvin's bio siblings. And over the course of those 3 days, it just became really clear to us that this very unconventional way of reuniting was a very necessary way to pursue keeping a family unit together. So we also learned about the Michigan, West Michigan way of being, which is that you're kind of born here, grow up here, live 10 minutes down the road from family, and you do indeed plan on dying here, perhaps. So it was just very apparent at the time through conversation that, you know, if we wanted more than once a year visit, that we would be the ones to let go of our jobs and our place that we identified so strongly with. And so quite timely, Micah was finishing his master's in environmental ed, and his school here was in the beginning stages of place-based ed, and he was able to get a position. So we drove the 17 hours and left family and friends and sunrise, sunset, mountains behind.
Yeah, wow. So, you know, moving is always hard. Whether you're moving down the block, I hope I never do it again, because it's really taxing. It takes a lot to pull that off. And yet you're coming here, I imagine, with also excitement and anticipation. Do you remember how you were feeling leading up to that move and maybe in the beginning parts of that move?
Yeah, well, not brave at all, but really desperate to make some of those significant changes. And so I think we felt hopeful that with this change would come some of the things that we were really longing to offer our family. I know for me, leading up, like, my daily consistent prayer, sometimes on my hands and knees, face down, was just like, please, God, just bring healing. Bring healing to our family, bring healing to our children, to our relationship. Just help this move be a move that brings healing. And so I felt very confident that this was the direction we were supposed to be going in. A lot of things were leading to us moving in this direction. So,
yeah, and it wasn't as though, you know, everything in Laramie was unicorns and rainbows, and then we were like, well, we need to do this too. It was, I would say that our second adoption with our youngest two children ended up becoming an extreme shock and difficulty. So, like, as we brought our children home, and even during the adoption, we were coming through some realities and difficulties that brought, I know myself specifically, but I think our whole family, to kind of a dark place of difficulty and self-crisis, because I'm sure that anybody who has a child biologically, as that child comes into your home and into your life, your life changes dramatically, obviously. But when you kind of like make a choice to adopt, and then you go and then you see those changes occur in such a drastic right now moment, and everything is in such chaos, it really brought me to a place of feeling really trapped and like I was drowning. And so I wouldn't say that we were thinking outwardly or overtly, this move is going to make things better, or us making this decision is an obedience to God's calling, which will cause for our lives to just all of a sudden be great. But I do feel that kind of subconsciously in the back, there was a lot of that probably going on. I feel that I was able to let go of some of the things that I very much loved about Laramie and Wyoming itself, because I kind of thought in the back of my mind, well, everything's just going to be better. And this is going to be, we're going to be blessed through this sacrifice we're making because, you know, of this great thing we're doing, even though we wouldn't necessarily use those words.
Right.
That's probably the narrative that is definitely underneath it all.
Right.
Hmm. So you have this subconscious, maybe set of expectations, which we all carry expectations into about everything that we do in life, right? How long is it going to take me to get through this line at the grocery store? And what's it going to be like to adopt children and then move? So we carry expectations. I think that's very human to do. You then got here in Grand Rapids. You've hinted at it a little bit, but can you tell us what it was like then to be on the other side of the move, and how did that meet or not meet those subconscious expectations that were there for you?
Yeah, so I would say that you can kind of view it as almost two levels. There's like the surface level of, oh, wow, this is different because it's not mountains. There's more people.
Right.
The cities are larger. You know, people don't just wear Carhartts everywhere. I mean, it was just, there's a lot of differences
right.
on the surface level that, you know, were still very difficult, I think, for me just to be like in a city and to see so many people and to just have that buzz of the city always around me. Many people would always smirk when I would say, this is just such a big city. And they'd be like, nah, this is a big city. But it was huge. I mean,
absolutely.
Suburban life was not something that we even knew about beyond just the TV show. And then to just live in a city and then move through suburbs, all that stuff was just a massive shock. But then I would say that if I was on kind of like a lower level, if I was broken down from that second adoption because of all the shock and difficulty that I was going through, I would say that the move cut me down even further. The move ended up kind of breaking me into this place that caused for deep anxiety, a lot of panic, expectations of every level being completely blown apart. And it just brought me to my knees literally on many occasions. It was extremely difficult.
Yeah, I think again, as I had said, like, we had hopes for a lot of change, bringing about a lot of change, which it did, but it was extreme shock, the change. Like, I jokingly would say to family, well, we're still in America and everyone still speaks English, but I have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't know my surroundings. We literally stopped knowing which way was northeast, southwest, because there were no mountains to orient to. There's trees everywhere and you can't see anything. So there was so much that was unknown, again, externally, but then also I think internally it revealed a lot that was still unknown to us. And so really, I think the move became this unraveling of so many things that had been just there. It just started unraveling so many things, whether it was, you know, who we identified in our careers and our identity, to how we were moving as a family. And we went from being in this community of 16 years and pretty much everyone knowing us because we had the diversity in the community in our family, to like no one really knew. And if we said we moved from Wyoming, they're like, that's just 1 minute away. That's the big deal. Like, stop crying.
I would also just add to that everything that seemed to work for us out west, first for me specifically, I mean, I was coming off of a master's that I had spent a lot of time working on. We had come off of jobs that we were living very comfortably with. And all of that stuff, that narrative of the hard work and the sitting through the difficulty paying off in the other end was just being obliterated. I mean, the home that we moved into had all these difficulties we had to deal with, from a brand new home that we lived in that was twice the size previously. I couldn't work hard enough to make things get better at my job. And our income was being completely obliterated with everything as far as the move was concerned and stuff. So all the things that I thought we could do to make things continue to be okay for us, quote unquote, okay, weren't working.
Yeah, okay, wow. Right?
Keeping it light.
Yeah, keeping it light, keeping it light. I'm so grateful for your vulnerability here today. So that was in 2016. Hindsight is, I don't know if it's 2020, but it's something better usually than what we can see in the moment. So you've had a few years. As you look back, how have you processed this event? And all of the things you've talked about today, maybe especially this unconscious often belief that if I just work hard, or if I just do the right things, or if I follow this sense of leading from God, then it will all just work out wonderfully. What have you learned? What has God been teaching you now that you're somewhat on the other side of that?
Well, I would say, at least for me, I feel like we still are learning, and we're still noticing. Because I very much believe it was this, you know, unraveling. And I think, like, God used our move to start unraveling our hearts and minds in a very necessary and needed way. But it also came with a lot of pain and a lot of discomfort. And so I think the biggest lesson that I'm trying to trust in is that even when I feel extreme confidence in what I'm wanting to provide myself, my husband, my children, our family as a collective, that it doesn't necessarily equate peace and comfort. And so I've had to really strip back my definition of who I am, who we as a family are, you know, attempting to be. And we have in our home a sign that just says, right here, right now, everything is okay. And I have to repeat that constantly, because if I go backwards, I find grief and a lot of remorse and sadness. And if I move forward, I start to experience a lot of worry and fear and even doubt of, like, I felt so confident in knowing who God was and where he was with us in Laramie. And then we moved here, and I just was like, I think he got stuck in Iowa somewhere. I don't know where he's at currently. But I think that's been one of the biggest lessons, is that if I can just focus on the very present moment, I can find God there more often than not.
I think that I realized that the breaking down of my understanding of success, my ego, my desire to feel as though I was comfortable in a situation or adequate, self-sufficient. I mean, that's a huge theme out west, is that you can do things for yourself. You don't need other people. All that stuff being broken down was a really, really important piece. And the idea that God shows up to us, God shows up disguised as our life, was always easy to think about when you were in the mountains seeing a beautiful sunrise, or you were fishing on a river, or, you know, you were living in a beautiful home, or your bank account felt comfortable. But when all that stuff starts getting stripped away, it's a much harder thing to do to say that's God too. And that was a really important piece to get to, and I think it's important for me to say that God doesn't take my money, but God is in the things that are difficult. God doesn't cause for difficulty, but God will be in those. And I had to get to the point where I could see that, and the only way that I was able to see that, and it's a consistent struggle to have to always remind myself this, is through contemplation and the very, 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 very specific idea of focusing on the moment and trying to be aware of what's happening and not pushing, which is difficult when things feel like they're falling apart around you. But to be aware of that and to be really cognizant of it all causes for you to stop feeling like you need to push back and try to get to the place where you were comfortable or to the place beyond that that is comfortable for you. And it forces you to pay attention and see God in those moments. If that makes sense.
I think it does. Yeah. Those are significant lessons. And I appreciate you saying that you're still learning them. You know, maybe some years of hindsight gives you a chance to get a little bit of clarity about what sort of unraveling has happened and some of it necessary. But yeah, you're also acknowledging that you haven't arrived and that it's still a struggle to believe some of these things, that God is with me, even in the dirt and the grime and the difficulty. So thank you. Thank you. You know, when we sat down, my sense of time is terrible, earlier this week, right? And just kind of said, well, there's a lot of parts of your story that you could tell. Sarah Jane didn't believe me, but I said, no, it's true. There are a lot of parts of your story that you could tell. Let's talk a little bit and let's see what kind of bubbles up. And as we talked, this is what arose, you know, this way in which you've experienced firsthand how powerful the narrative is. Again, that if I do the right things, work hard, trust God, be obedient to whatever God's calling me to, then life is going to have an ease to it. The pieces are just going to fit together. And again, your vulnerability of being willing to sit up here today and say, that just isn't always true, is really commendable. I'm grateful for it. I think we are too, yes? Can we give them our gratitude this morning? Thank you. Guys. Thank you. Thanks, Brendan. Come on. So my guess is that, well, like I think all of the stories that get told here in this series, there are places where our story, your story, intersects the story that you've just heard, where something that has been said or shared resonates with you, stirs in you, convicts you, encourages you. And so, Zach, if you'd put up that kind of only slide for the morning, I want to just give a couple of minutes here and invite you to consider these questions. I think these are on the sheets of paper. If you are on the lawn and you have these sheets of paper, but here they are. They're fairly simple. What's one thing that struck you? What's one thing that stood out as Sarah Jane and Micah were sharing? If something struck you or stood out, that may be a thing to reflect on further. And then to help you reflect, here are a couple of other questions. How might that story speak to your story? Again, where do they intersect? And is there a step or a word or an idea that perhaps God wants to give to you today, or a step that God wants you to take? And so we're just going to take a couple minutes here to just give some space, some silence, to reflect on those questions, so that we're not just spectators this morning listening to a story, but we are people, all of us, open to whatever it might be that God may want to say to us today. So let's take a couple of minutes to reflect on that together.